welcome to Parents' Perspective. Read it again, Daddy. Four-year-old Tony clapped his hands in delight and snuggled into his father's lap with his fraying blanket and stuck his wet, wrinkled thumb back into his mouth. His dad sighed.
Hey, sport. Glad you like the book, but don't you think it would be fun to read a new one now? We've already read this one twice.
Tony removed his thumb long enough to reply emphatically,
No, I like this one. I like Danny the Dump Truck.
Then he stuck his thumb back into his mouth like a cork in a bottle and snuggled back against his dad's chest expectantly. Tony's mom, Janice, peered into the bedroom.
Dump truck time again, eh? She smiled.
Oh, yeah, his dad replied, grimacing. We're going to have it memorized soon.
It's a clever book, though, Janice reminded him. The way the artist weaves some of the clues into the pictures, it's very exciting for pre-readers, I think.
Tony's thumb popped out of his mouth and he sat straight in his dad's lap.
Read, he commanded. I want to hear the story.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about children's literature? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert on what children like to read. Vicki Velsey retired after 29 years as a school librarian. An active member of Capital Choices, an organization for school librarians, she's also an avid storyteller. She has two grown sons and two grandchildren. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Vicki.
Thank you.
What would you say is the most important ingredient in a good children's book?
The story is the most important ingredient in a children's book. The story is what carries the action forward, and action is what children are looking for in a book, from young readers up to middle grade readers right into high school.
So this business about character development and all that, that's for us old people.
Oh, and parlor novels where they sit and drink tea and they never go outside and they just talk and talk. No. Unless a child is interested in what's happening in a book, and especially what's going to happen next, the book is going to fail. So the person who's writing the book has to make sure that the child is going to keep turning those pages or they lose the reader.
At what age should a child begin to select his or her own books? We heard in the story, of course, that very young, they have very strong feelings. Should we just go with that, or should we give them a little guidance?
Oh, I think that a child should select books as soon as they can crawl. I mean, watch a child in a playroom or a nursery. They will crawl toward a preferred toy. Well, put books along the way in the place where the toys are, and the child will be selecting books at a very early age before they can even talk or say the word book.
But in that situation, they're going to select books not because they're page turners, because they don't know, but because they have wonderful illustrations, or what are things that attract children?
That's what should attract children at that age. When you're making a decision about a book, you use all of your powers of decision-making. And for a baby who's crawling, that would be a bright cover on a book, or remembering that the book has a picture of a ball or a dog in it and wanting to see that picture again.
There are books that I've just discovered that are written with no words. They're stories with wonderful pictures. I have one grandchild, and she's only 6 months old. So we're reading her books, of course, since the very beginning. She has learned very quickly that if you prop her up in your lap, she's ready. If you hold her a certain way, she's facing forward. She's waiting for the book. So she's looking for the book. And you put a book in front of her that you're making up the story to and just showing her pictures. And she loves it now. And she gets a little bit older. She's probably going to want the story to be the same every time. It isn't.
That's a challenge, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Those are wordless books, and they have a place in a children's library or in a home library. You can make up a story. You can change the story and see if the child has a reaction to that, and then discuss their reaction. I think books, particularly lap books, should be a way of communicating with a child through a very relaxed conversation. And this can go on as long as the child is willing to sit, maybe not on your lap, but beside you, and listen to you read as they get older. I think having conversations about books is a wonderful way to evaluate a book without having to write a book report or one of those awful things that you have to do for a classroom teacher. You can be reporting on a book just by having a wonderful, quiet conversation with a parent or a friend.
Like, how do you think the bunny felt when he couldn't get the carrot or that kind of thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Other thing that I always think about when I think of books for young children is using all the different senses. It would seem to me that might be an important ingredient, things that are tactile, things that sometimes they have scratch and sniff stuff, I remember. Are those things significant?
Well, they can be. I mean, this makes a book stand out above some of the other books, and we all know Pat the Bunny, and there are other books like that. But think about having a child on your lap with a book in front of you, and think about all the things that are going on as those pages are turning. Maybe even the child has learned how to turn the pages for herself or himself, and you've got your arms around the child. There's tactile things going on right there that don't have to do with what you bought the book for. You're providing the tactile sensations, and you're providing the laughter when you get to a part that you both think is funny, or the surprise when something happens unexpectedly in the book, when somebody goes boo or something like that.
But I think they are expecting a story when they have a book. Today, I've noticed a lot of the toys that weren't around when my children were little still have some of the same basic ingredients, like tactile or different sounds. The blocks,
yes.
They're the soft little blocks for when they're very young, have feel different on all sides. And if you squeeze, one may squeak and one may scrunch and that kind of thing.
Toys
so they
that
get
crackle
a lot of that.
And
yes.
Toys that ring, little bells inside.
But like you said, I think they're even very little children are expecting a story.
What occurs to me is when we're talking about stories, there's a whole genre of books that I'm sure are good sellers that are only about things. There's no story at all. Here's one apple. Here are two blocks. Here's three. This things that are supposed to teach the child either numeric concepts or this is the name of an object or something like that. And the question is, are these valuable books for kids to have, or are these sort of a waste of time?
Oh, they're certainly not a waste of time, but I would say that at a certain age, at a very young age, you are helping your child to name things and to recognize an object and to hear the parent's voice saying that this is a horse and this is a zebra and here's the difference between one and the other. And so this is part of a child's expanding worldview. You may not need a story for a book like that, but naming things and recognizing things is a very important step in development. I don't go along with the idea that you need to educate, quote-unquote, using books at home. I mean, you have plenty of teachers when the child gets along to nursery school, preschool, and kindergarten who will be doing these things in a stepwise fashion. But if you have books like that early on, I think they're good for recognition of words and pictures.
Are there certain types of books that appeal to specific ages and stages?
Yes. And if you are a new parent, it can be pretty bewildering because there's about 5,000 books that are published each year for young people. So you will want to have a little bit of help. And there is help. There are many, many guides that have been published. And at any given time that you go to a bookstore or to a public library, you will find a good selection of guides that have been compiled by people who know something about children's reading tastes and preferences, and who know a lot about the market, about children's literature market. People who have read thousands of books. There's one that's currently available. It just came out last spring by Anita Silvey in 100 Best Books for Children. And she says in the beginning that she figures that she's probably read about 125,000 books in her career.
Oh, my goodness. This makes me think of having eye strain.
Her guide would be a very good guide to use. I would say that probably the best-known guide like that would be the one by Jim Trelease, and he's been in the business a long time. He has a book called The Read Aloud Handbook, and he started that 25 years ago. And so now he's in his fifth edition of it, and he begins the book. Most of the book actually is taken up with questions that parents might have about books and about reading at home. And he answers just about every question you can think of. Now, the ends of these books, these guides, usually have lists of new books and steady seller books and old favorites, sometimes called classic books. And those lists are divided up by the age of the children, or sometimes they're divided up by the type of books that you find in them. There's picture books, and picture books are usually rather large and thin, books of about 32 or 64 pages, and illustrations on every page. Then you would get to the level of easy readers or beginner readers, and those are books where the author has been told to be sure and keep the words short and the sentences short and only so many lines per page. And the pictures have to be chosen so that they will suggest to the child what certain words mean. So there's a lot of effort put into that. And then you work up to short novels for the children who pass through the easy reader stage. And then on to the longer novels for middle elementary grades, for ages 10 to 14, sort of.
Can you give examples of each of these kinds of books so that if parents are out there and they're not sure, you know, what an easy reader book would be or a short novel would be, you know, some ones that you've
run across? Easy reader books are pretty much all the same size. They're probably about 4.5 by 7 inches, maybe a little bit larger than that, but they all fit together on the shelf. They all look as if they're a mm-hmm. set. And some of the best ones were developed very early on by Dr. Seuss. And you have One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish, you know, and a lot of books like that. And you have the Little Bear books that were developed by a rival publisher way back in the beginning, in the 60s, when these books were first developed to help children learn to read. And when you go on to short novels, you get into something that the children call chapter books. Mm-hmm. And chapter books, oh, the children are so delighted when they're able to talk about chapter books, because it means that they've moved up the ladder. It's kind of a rite of passage. And they usually have a lot of illustrations, too, and larger print than books for older children. And some children go right through chapter books and on to longer novels, and some stay there for a long time. I don't think you should be worried if your child stays at a particular level too long, because they will eventually move on.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on children's literature.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with retired school librarian Vicki Velsey about children's literature.
I remember very keenly what it felt like when I was just going into the third grade and my mother took me to a new library and I was looking at picture books. And she said, you know, I think you'd like this book. And she handed me a book and I said, I can't read that. It's too long. It was over 100 pages. And she said, sure you can. I said, do you really think so? I felt very timid about it, and I can remember that library as well as anything. And I read it, and it was so good. And I just reread the same book just a few weeks ago. This 60 years later, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's still good. I got so much out of it. It's called The Moffats by Eleanor Estes. Mm-hmm. It takes place in Connecticut and near New Haven. And I thought, oh, isn't this a wonderful book?
Where did the Judy Blume books fit into all this? Would that be called a short novel, or are those the chapter books that you were talking about?
Well, it depends on which ones you're talking about. She wrote books that were considered a little bit edgy in her day, mm-hmm. because she would inject little discussions about sex or going to the bathroom or things like that. The parents would say, wait a minute, that's not the kind of book I'm used to. But children, of course, love these things. Mm-hmm. And so there were books that dealt with some serious topics. And you get on up further into some of her books. There's one called Forever, and it's about a girl who has a love affair with a boy and then just leaves him devastated.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Surprise after that.
That's a Judy
Blume.
Oh, that's a Judy Blume. So it runs the gamut.
How do you feel about using children's books to help a child deal with specific personal issues? I guess we just started this with the fellow that's devastated from the love affair.
Yeah.
But do you have situations that you've come across of seeing a child use a book for that
oh,
kind
yes.
of help?
Yeah, but not that I had planned. I could preface that by saying that I think the most successful authors are the ones who remember what it was like to be a mm-hmm. child. And when an adult is reading that kind of book, they can recognize that right away. I mean, they know the way that the author handles joys and hurts and triumphs and fears. And they a really good author can weave those things into a book gracefully and sometimes with very gentle humor. And they'll speak to a child without sounding like therapy. You can find stories about losing a tooth or being very shy, you know, when there's company or missing mommy when she goes out without you. And then you can also find books about bullying on the playground or losing a friend when you have to move away or something like that. But for a really serious issue like a death in the family, I think a book can be a big help as long as adults realize that it's only one of a number of ways to deal with that mm-hmm. that issue. That you understand that the book may just really give you a chance to open a conversation mm-hmm. with the child about that. And that's a good thing. Now, if the child doesn't feel like talking at that time, then you just wait and see if later on a conversation can be started. In schools, I know that we librarians and the teachers too know it's not a good idea to call attention to somebody who's had a personal crisis and try to read something like that to the whole class mm-hmm. because it would undermine what the child is, you know, trying to build.
But if a parent called the school librarian and said, listen, my child's just lost a cousin or her best friend moved away or whatever mm-hmm. it happens to be, the school librarian could recommend a book.
Oh, yes.
Child.
Yeah. Okay. And we would talk to that parent and make sure that they're not simply just going to hand the book to the child as if they're handing them a pill or, mm-hmm. you know, some easy way to get out of a situation. I wanted to tell the story about not really planning a therapy session because it wasn't therapy at all. I had a class of second graders, and they study Indians. I think a lot of second graders study Indians. And so I chose an Iroquois story to read aloud to them. And it was about an orphaned boy whose uncle didn't want to take care of him, and he took him out in the woods the way Hansel and Gretel's father did, you know, and just left him. He did a mean-spirited thing, the story says. And the boy finds himself surrounded by animals who can talk to him, and he can understand them, and he talks back to them, and they say, "You can live with us. And come and live with us." And the beaver says, "You'd like to do what we do." And the mole says, "Oh, you'd like to do what we do." And finally he realizes he can't hold his breath as long as the beaver, and he can't dig in the ground like the mole. So the mother bear takes him, and he plays with her cubs, and they roam through the woods, and they eat honey and berries and everything. And I don't think the story had the word adoption in it at all. But when I finished the story, there was a girl who was sitting on the rug, and she didn't get up with the rest of them. She just sat there with these big round eyes, and she said, "That was the best story I ever heard." And I thought, I didn't go to do this. Yeah. I didn't plan this at all. And yet it went straight to her.
She was an adopted child.
She was an adopted child.
What do you advise when a child's interest outstrips his reading level? He wants to read about topics that are kind of beyond what his capability is in terms of actual reading.
I guess it would depend on what that subject were, but I would say that sometimes parents come in and say, "Please don't send home books with my child that he can't read," when I think to myself, that's a golden opportunity. If a child is really interested in a subject, you know, like stars and planets, and they're not able to read about it successfully, I think it's wonderful if you let them take the book, because right away you're affirming what the child's choice, and you're giving the parent a golden opportunity to read with the child. And that's a good thing, because it gives the parent a chance to talk to the child about what they have in front of them, and stimulates the child to want to improve her or his reading ability. And it helps with learning new vocabulary, and that's a favorite subject with a child. The child usually knows a lot of the vocabulary but hasn't seen it in print. And this is a chance for the child to look at the word and be able to recognize it the next time. And they're stimulated by their interest in it.
Which is always very funny because the children pronounce words that you can't imagine what the word is, but it's something they've never heard pronounced.
I love that. Yeah, you have to try to keep from laughing about that one.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on children's literature.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with retired school librarian Vicki Velsey about children's literature.
We had a first grader once in the school, and he used to take any book we had in the library about trees and plants. Well, this is true in a fairly small library like a school library, that you can go through all the books at your reading level pretty quickly about a particular subject. So he finally worked his way up to an adult book called The International Book of Trees, which is one of the best reference books on trees that I know. And I'm sort of an amateur botanist, so I'm very fond of this book myself. And I let him take it out, and he's still taking it out. He doesn't take it out exclusively. He takes out other things. But I thought, what a great thing, because who knows? He may become an arborist or a botanist someday, and he'll remember that somebody let him tote that heavy book home.
Well, we had a son who was very interested in some rock stars and did not read a lot of other books that I would have been very happy for him to read. Oh, yeah. And what he wanted to do was read these books that were so frightening to me, a whole autobiography of Kurt Cobain, who committed suicide. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do with this? What's your advice when you have a situation where the kids have interests that are off the charts?
I guess you need to have a certain amount of patience, and you need to look into the situation and think, what is it about this person, this star or whatever, that is drawing the child's interest? And maybe it's something that you haven't thought of before. It would take a little thought. You might want to have a conversation, you know. Why are you so interested in this person? Without putting that kind of edge in your voice that says, if you take this book, I'm going to come down on my fist. But, you know, try to figure out what it is. And the patience involved also involves keep putting other books around as choices at home. And then, if you want to, talk to the school librarian and find out, you know, what else is going on, because there are different worlds that a child lives in.
What resources do you suggest for our listeners who would like to continue to research children's literature? And also, you mentioned earlier some specific sites to go to or references to turn to. We need you to spell those names for our listeners.
Well, you can read guidebooks like the Jim Tralee's Read Aloud Handbook and then Nita Silvey's book, and there's a number of other ones.
How do you spell their names? Jim?
T-R-E-L-E-A-S-E.
Okay.
And Anita Silvey is spelled Anita S-I-L-V-E-Y. And there are lots of other ones. And in fact, we can make those available, I suppose, if people want to write in for it. There are books that deal specifically with African American characters, families, issues, and history. And that book is Donna Rand's Black Books Galore, A Guide to More Great African American Children's Books. And there are books that are specific for the very youngest children. There's Kathleen O'Dean's Great Books for Babies and Toddlers. O'Dean is spelled O-D-E-A-N with no apostrophe. And Dorothy Butler's Babies Need Books, a wonderful resource. Now, that was last revised in 1998, but her front matter in that book is so timeless that I would seriously recommend that for any new parent looking for that. Now, reviews of new books can be found in journals dealing with children's publishing and library services, Hornbook, Book List, which is one word, school library journal. And if you go to your public library, you can find back copies and current copies of those.
And I would think one of the best references is the children's librarian in the public library.
Absolutely.
You can go
talking to a librarian in the library. And if you go in, try to pick a weekday before school lets out, because then they have more time on their hands to talk to you, and not a weekend.
And if you go in saying, my child is especially interested in insects or spy stories or
Absolutely.
Something, then they have something to pin it on.
Yeah, and the library is a wonderful place to go, because there everything is set out for you, and it's organized by age level. You can find the board books over here. You can find the beginner reader books over there, and find chapter books in still another place. So it's easy to find your way around. Now, you can also look at books that have won medals and awards, and those are on websites from the American Library Association, which gives a lot of the awards.
And what is that website?
If you just point your search engine to American Library Association, you'll get it. Capital Choices, that you mentioned a little while ago, a committee I belong to, which is made up of public librarians as well as school librarians, they have a website, www.capitalchoices.org, and capital is spelled with an O.
Like the building.
Like the building.
Well, you have certainly given us an awful lot to go on. I can just feel all the parents getting ready, getting out there, getting ready to get to that library, go to the computer, figure it out, and the kids just have to behave while we're getting all this done. Thank you so much, Vicki Velsey, for being with us and helping us to have a better understanding of how important children's literature is and how we can choose it wisely.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you, Sandy, and thank you, Linda.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not pretty obvious. Again, it's 1-800-791-8573 and mention show number 243. Tell us, if you can, what station you are listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. We'd like to remind you about some important toll-free numbers for parents and kids. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. And the National Runaway Switchboard, 1-800-621-4000. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.